As soon as he was brought to the Astral City, after a period of extreme perturbation, he realized the necessity of active work, and set out to prepare our future home. When I arrived, we settled together in the house for which he had so lovingly labored, and we were truly happy. My husband then set out to teach me all that he had learned. On Earth, I was left a widow when I was still very young. With the heavy responsibility of several children to raise, my struggle was intense. Working incessantly, I gave my little ones the best education I could, although they, too, had to become accustomed to hard work at an early age. I understood later that strenuous life had sheltered me against many dangerous temptations, sparing me much suffering and anguish in the lower zone. Physical fatigue and a healthy occupation on the material plane are valuable means of protection and ascension for the soul. Meeting Richard again and resuming our loving union in a new home made me feel as if I were in heaven. For many years we led a life on undisturbed bliss, growing closer and closer to each other, and working, not only for our own evolution, but also cooperating constructively for the progress of others. After some time, Lizia's, Yolanda and Judith came to join us, thus increasing our happiness. After a short pause, during which she seemed wrapped in thought, she proceeded in a more serious tone. The earth awaits us, however. Though the present is joyful, the past demands restitution in order for the future to be in harmony with the eternal law. We can't pay our debts to the earth with our bonus, we have to do it with the sweat of our brow in the fulfillment of its work. Because of our goodwill, our psychic visions are becoming clearer about our grievous past. The eternal law, with its unfailing rhythm, renders our return to the planet an absolute necessity. These elucidations impressed me deeply. It was the first time since my arrival in the colony that I had heard such forceful references to the subject of former lives. "Laura," I exclaimed, "pardon me for interrupting, but I really am curious to know why. To this point, I haven't found out anything about my spiritual past. Am I free from physical bonds? Haven't I crossed the river of death? Did you remember your former existences soon after your arrival here, or did you have to wait for the action of time?" "I certainly had to wait," she replied with a smile. "First you must rid yourself of all physical impressions. The scales of inferiority are extremely thick, and you must have a good mental balance to be able to recollect constructively. As a rule, we all have made clamorous errors in the cycles of eternal life. He who keeps the memory of a crime committed considers himself the unhappiest creature of the universe. On the other hand, he who remembers having been a victim thinks his misfortune is the greatest. So only souls who are sure of themselves are endowed with such a gift as the power of spontaneous recollection. Others are duly limited in their reminiscences, and if they attempt to break this rule, they may incur spiritual imbalance and insanity. But did you remember your past in the natural course of things?" "I'll tell you," she went on patiently, "as my inner vision became gradually clearer, vague recollections began stirring in the depths of my mind, causing me great mental anguish. It happened that my husband also shared my spiritual condition, so we decided to consult Assistant Lombard. After having examined our impressions thoroughly, he sent us to the magnetizers in the Ministry of Elucidation. We were kindly received, and were taken to the recording department, where we all have our private files. Specialists of that ministry advised us to spend all the time we could spare from our work for 2 years there, reading our own memoirs which span 3 centuries. The director of the recollection service wouldn't allow us to go back beyond the time because the remembrance of those distant epochs would be too much for us."
"And were the memoirs enough to help you remember your past?"
"No, the reading gave us only facts. After a long period of meditation meant to arouse our own inner realization, we were submitted, to our great surprise, to a series of psychic treatments geared at penetrating deeply into the emotional field of our recollections. Specialists in the subject applied magnetic passes over our brains, arousing certain latent forces in us.
Only then could Richard and I fully remember over 300 years and realize how heavy our debts to earthly organizations still were. Footnote. Magnetic passes is a method by which an operator using both hands, rhythmically applies stroking movements, slightly away from the body, to manipulate the subject's magnetic field. Translator's note. Chapter 22, The Hour Bonus. Perceiving that a sad expression had veiled Laura's face at the mention of her husband, I changed the course of our conversation by inquiring, "What about the hour bonus? Is it some kind of currency?" My hostess' vague expression vanished, and she replied graciously, "It isn't exactly money, it's more of an individual service coupon with acquisitive value." "Acquisitive?" I asked wonderingly. "Why not?" she continued. "Here in the Astral City, the production of food and clothing belongs to the community. The government house runs distribution departments from which these commodities are sent to the different ministries. The central storehouse is common property. Everyone cooperates for the prosperity of the public welfare, as we all depend on it for our sustenance. However, those who work are granted certain privileges according to their merits. Each of the city's inhabitants receives the strictly essential provision of food and clothing, but those who earn our bonus are entitled to certain prerogatives in the community. The entity who cannot work may find shelter here, but only those who cooperate for the colony's welfare may own their own private home. The idle will be provided with the essential clothing, but devoted workers will be able to satisfy their taste in dress. You see, inactive entities may, through the influence of friends, be lodged in our rest homes or hospital parks. However, only hard-working spirits who strive to gain our bonuses may enjoy the company of those they love, and attend places of entertainment and the different schools existing in all the ministries where precious teachings are delivered by wise instructors. It is necessary for us to learn the price of each improvement in the scale of spiritual ascent. All of us on the working staff of the colony must contribute at least 8 hours of useful service per day. But there is so much to be done in the different sectors that the government house allows those who are really willing to cooperate to put in 4 extra hours a day. Thus, many people earn as much as 72-hour bonuses a week, not counting those earned in sacrificial missions when remuneration is doubled and sometimes tripled. But is the hour bonus the only standard of remuneration? Yes, it is the only one we have here, and it is applied to all workers in the Astral City, in both high and low positions. Recalling earthly organizations, I inquired curiously, "But how can you reconcile the payment with the nature of the work? If a minister, for instance, receives 8-hour bonuses in an ordinary day, what will a driver receive? The same compensation? Isn't the former work of a higher nature than the latter's?" My hostess smiled at my question and explained, "It all depends. In positions of responsibility as well as in humble ones, if the work requires self-sacrifice and abnegation, the corresponding remuneration is properly calculated. However, to give a more thoughtful answer to your question, it's first necessary to discard certain earthly prejudices altogether. The nature of work is a problem of the utmost importance, but only on Earth does its solution present such great difficulties. Most incarnate men are still trying their first steps in the spirit of service and learning simple, elementary lessons in the performance of their missions in the different walks of life. It's essential that earthly remunerations be fixed with scrupulous care. All material earnings are but transitory acquisitions. Yet we often see people obsessed by profit, who, on passing over, leave enormous fortunes to be recklessly dissipated by their heirs. Others accumulate bank accounts that become the cause of endless worries to themselves and a source of discord in their families. On the other hand, we must keep in view the fact that 70% of the earthly executives are still far from being conscious of the moral responsibilities inherent to their positions, and that the same may be said of an approximately equal percentage of those toiling under their direction. The majority of them spend their lives pleading lack of professional enthusiasm, yet it would never enter their heads to doubt their right to the remunerations corresponding to the positions they so inadequately hold. Governments and firms employ doctors, who neglect their sacred duty, turning to other channels of activity instead. Workmen pride themselves in wasting the time for which they are paid. Where is the quality of work? In all sectors of public life, in both high and low positions, one finds experts who have never fully realized the responsibility of their obligations, and who, like poisonous flies on bread, avail themselves of magnanimous laws to claim all sorts of facilities, bonuses, and pensions. You may be sure, however, that they will pay a bitter price for their carelessness. The time seems to be still distant when the Earth's social institutions will be able to evaluate the quality of man's work, but in the higher spirit plane, work is never assessed without taking into consideration the moral effort exerted. These words awakened a new train of thoughts in my mind. Seeing how interested I was in the subject, Laura continued to speak. The real profit must be of a spiritual nature, and in our organization the actual value of the hour bonus varies according to the nature of the work performed. Thus, in the Ministry of Regeneration we have the Regeneration Hour Bonus, in the Ministry of Elucidation we have the Elucidation Hour Bonus, and so on. Spiritual merit is always taken into account, so our individual service files specify the essence of our work. Fundamental acquisitions include experience and education, an increase in divine blessing, and the extension of opportunities. According to that point of view, assiduity and abnegation are by far the most important factors. As a rule, most of us in this colony of transition go through a time of preparation for our return to the Earth. Hence, it's obvious that a man who devoted 5,000 hours to redeeming tasks should have achieved a great measure of sublime effort on his own behalf. One who worked 6,000 hours in the Ministry of Elucidation will have become wiser. We may spend our bonuses as we please, however, our individual file with its record of the time we spend in useful service, is still a more valuable asset to us, as it entitles us to all sorts of privileges. My curiosity seemed to know no bounds as I continued to ask questions on the subject. May we spend our bonuses on behalf of friends? Certainly, she answered, we may share the fruits of our efforts with whomever we please. It's every faithful worker's inalienable right. Thousands and thousands of people here in the Astral City have benefited from the fruits of friendship and brotherly devotion. Lizzie's mother smiled as she continued her observations. The longer our period of useful service, the greater the number of intercessions we are allowed. Here, we cannot help realizing that everything has its price, and that in order to receive we must give. Asking, therefore, is a most significant thread in the fabric of our lives, for only those who have attained a certain spiritual status are in the position to ask favors and dispense help. And what about inheritance? I inquired abruptly. It's a simple matter here, she replied with a smile. For instance, in my own case, the time is drawing near when I shall have to return to the physical sphere. Well, I possess at the present moment in my service account, 3,000 assistance hour bonuses. I may not leave them to my daughter who is about to arrive, as they will have to revert to the community. The only thing my family will inherit is the home. However, my service record entitles me to intercede on her behalf, procuring work and friendly cooperation for her, and precious assistance for myself from our colony's organizations during my stay on the physical sphere. Besides, I shall return to Earth endowed with a higher degree of experience, acquired during my years of cooperation in the Ministry of Assistance, which should contribute to the hoped-for success of my new human existence. I was about to express my admiration for the simple process of earning, profiting, cooperating and serving, in comparison with the prevailing principles on Earth, when I heard the low murmur of voices approaching the house. Before I could make my remark, Laura declared, "Here are our dear ones back." And she went to welcome them. Chapter 23. the art of listening. I could not help feeling sorry that our talk was interrupted, for Laura's elucidations were most stimulating. Lizzie's had come back in evident good spirits. "Hello. Haven't you retired yet?" he asked with a smile. While the two young men took their leave, he invited me cordially to come down to the garden. "You haven't seen the moonlight from this side of town," he said. While Laura talked with her daughters, I followed Lizzie's into the garden. It was really a magnificent sight. Accustomed as I was to the hospital grounds, which were secluded among large trees, I had not yet had the opportunity to contemplate the wonderful spectacle of a moonlit night from the spacious quarters gloxinias of the Ministry of Assistance. Exquisitely colored gloxinias enhanced the beauty of the scenery and provided a vivid background for fragrant, snow-white lilies, which were slightly tinged with blue at the base of their cups. I drew in deep breaths, feeling a wave of new energy fill my whole being. In the distance rose the towers of the government house, bathed in a beautiful display of lights. I was hushed into admiration, and only after some time did I manage to speak at all. "What a night! I have never experienced such peace," Lizzie's smiled and explained. "All the well-balanced inhabitants of the colony have pledged to avoid emitting negative currents of thought. Thus the effort of the majority merges into an almost continual prayer, hence the atmosphere of peace all around us." For some time we gazed in wonder at the soul-stirring scenery, trying to absorb the night's opalescent light and soothing calm. Then we returned to the living room, where Lizzie's approached a small, radio-like apparatus. My curiosity was instantly aroused, and I wondered what we were going to hear. "Messages from the Earth?" my kind friend, reading my thoughts, explained. "We aren't going to hear any voices from the planet. Our broadcasts here are based on vibratory currents far more subtle than those on Earth." "But are there no means," I inquired, "of picking up broadcasts from Earth?" "Of course there are, and they do it in all the ministries. But in our homes we must concern ourselves only with our present condition and activities. After all, the work programs in the different departments, the tidings from higher spheres, and lofty teachings are much more important to us than any earthly problems." The remark was just, but, still bound by domestic ties, I insisted. "Do you really think so? What about our relatives left behind? Our parents? Our children?" I was expecting that question. "You see, my friend, on the material plane, we often misinterpret situations. Most of us suffer from emotional hypertrophy. There on Earth we are slaves to exclusivism and inclined to limit our family to those bound to us by blood ties. We go through life heedless of the true principles of brotherhood, and although we preach them to everyone, when it comes to putting our beliefs into practice, nothing counts but our own flesh and blood. Here, however, life presents a different aspect. We have to conquer our old weaknesses and rectify injustices. We are told that in the early days of the colony, every home possessed the necessary equipment to pick up broadcasts from the physical sphere. Everybody insisted on hearing news of his earthly relations, so that, from the ministry of regeneration to that of elevation, the city's inhabitants lived with their nerves on edge. Disturbing rumors interfered with the good order of activities in general. Sometimes whole families were thrown into a state of utter confusion because of bad tidings from their dear ones still on Earth. When collective catastrophes on Earth in any way affected those lodged in the colony, they assumed the proportion of public calamities. According to our records, the city was more like a purgatorial zone than the place of rest and instruction it was meant to be. The late governor was perhaps a little too tolerant, and, as you know, indiscriminate kindness engenders indiscipline and failure. But 2 centuries ago, one of the devoted ministers of the Divine Union urged the governor to change that deplorable situation. Supported by the ministry, the governor forbade the widespread communications with Earth. There was great opposition, But the generous minister who had introduced the measure called to witness Jesus' teaching, "Let the dead bury their dead," and in a short time the innovation was successfully implemented. "Still," I insisted, "it would be most comforting to have news of our dear ones on earth. Wouldn't we feel more at rest?" Lysias, who had been standing by the receiver without turning it on, continued his explanation. "Now, take yourself as an example to see whether that would be wise. Would you be prepared, for instance, to hear that a beloved son was maligning another, or being maligned himself? Would you maintain the necessary serenity, waiting with faith and acting in accordance with the divine precepts? If someone informed you that one of your brothers had just been imprisoned as a criminal, would you be strong enough to keep calm?" I smiled disappointedly. "We shouldn't try to look for news from lower spheres," Lysias continued obligingly, "except when we are able to render a just service. We must always keep in mind that no one can help justly and efficiently when under emotional or mental stress. So we have to go through suitable preparation before risking any new contacts with our earthly relations. If they offered an adequate field for spiritual love, the exchange would be worthwhile. But unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of incarnate people has not yet attained even a moderate degree of self-control. Most of them lead haphazard lives, drifting with the high and low tides of their material conditions. In spite of our sentiments, we must avoid being drawn into low vibratory spheres." Giving evidence of my stubbornness, I still argued the point. "But Lysias, your father is back on earth. Wouldn't you like to communicate with him?" "Of course," he answered kindly, "whenever we deserve the joy, and the contact between us is considered opportune, we visit him in his new physical body. But we mustn't forget that we are fallible creatures, and as such should refer to the competent departments and let them decide about the opportunity and merit of such visits. That specialized work is done by the Ministry of Communication. Besides, it's well remember that although it is easier to descend from a higher to a lower sphere than the other way around, there are certain principles regulating communication between the different spheres that must be taken into consideration. They tell us that a true understanding of those still in the lower zones is essential to render them adequate help. It's just as important to know how to speak as to know how to listen. This colony was in a constant state of unrest because its inhabitants, not knowing how to listen, were unable to help efficiently. Thus, the spiritual atmosphere here was often sadly impaired." At Ho's irrefutable arguments, I lapsed into a brooding silence, while Lysias turned on the receiver under my watchful eye. Chapter 24, A Soul-Stirring Appeal. Soft music floated into the room, soothing us with its melodious cadence, while on the screen we saw the announcer in his studio. In a few moments, he began to speak. "This is Station 2, Residents. Our colony continues to broadcast its appeal for peace on Earth. We urge all workers of goodwill to muster their energy to help maintain the moral balance on the Earth. Please, all who can spare a few hours to cooperate in the border zones that connect the dark forces of the lower zone to the human mind, help us. Dark bands of ignorant entities, after having left a bloody trail of war in Asia, are laying siege to the European nations, urging them on to new crimes. Our colony, together with all those dedicated to the work of spiritual hygiene in the spheres nearest to the Earth, denounce this onset of the concentrated powers of evil, and request brotherly collaboration and all possible help. Remember that the cause of peace needs defenders. Join in and cooperate with us to the best of your abilities. There is work for everyone, from the regions of the earth to our very gates. May the Lord bless us." The voice silenced and again I heard the celestial melody. The impressive tones of that call stirred my very soul. Lysias hastened to my aid with his usual explanations. "We are listening to Residents, an old colony closely connected with the lower zones. As you know, it is August, 1939. All the suffering you have gone through lately has left you little time to ponder the grave situation on Earth. but you can see that the Earth's nations are facing the imminent threat of a tremendous war. Really? I asked, awed, but wasn't there enough bloodshed in the last world war? Lysias smiled and looked at me in silence as if lamenting the gravity of the problem. It was the first time that he did not respond to my question. His silence was strange. The immensity of the spiritual services in my new plane of life overwhelmed me. Were the cities of generous spirits asking for assistance and cooperation? The voice of the speaker was presented in the tone of an SS's rundown appearance showed on our screen, and his disquieted eyes betrayed his deep anxiety. And the language? I distinctly heard him speak in clear and correct Portuguese. I had thought that all the spiritual colonies communicated through thought vibrations. Were there, then, such great difficulties in the interchange? Seeing my bewilderment, Lysias explained. We are still far from the ideal regions of the mind. As on Earth, those who are in perfect harmony with each other may communicate through thoughts, without any of the barriers of speech, but generally, we cannot dispense with the linguistic form in a broad sense. Our area of battle is immeasurable. Earthly humanity, made up of millions of beings, is united with the invisible humanity of the planet, which numbers in the billions. It would be impossible to reach the more perfect zones, right after physical death. Our national and linguistic heritage remain with us, and our thoughts are restricted within our psychic borders. In different sectors or our activities there are a great number of spirits free from all imitations, but we mustn't forget that nothing escapes the principles of sequence at work in the laws of evolution. Meanwhile, the music stopped and the speaker returned. This is Residence, Station 2. The colony continues to broadcast its appeal on behalf of peace on Earth. Dark clouds are gathering over the skies of Europe. Forces of darkness from the lower zone, attracted by the base tendencies of mankind, are spreading in all directions. Devoted benefactors are stationed in political offices, struggling and making great sacrifices on behalf of international harmony. Some governments, however, are too centralized, and offer few possibilities for spiritual collaboration. These countries, deprived of serene and dispassionate counsel, are moving towards a great and terrible war. Oh, beloved brothers of the higher spheres, let us help to preserve peace on Earth. Let us help to defend centuries of experience of the numerous centers of Western civilization. May the Lord bless us. After a short silence, and I did not dare speak. After 5 minutes of the shooting music, the voice continued. This is Residence, Station 2. The colony continues to broadcast its appeal on behalf of peace on Earth. Fellow workers and brothers, let us invoke the protection of the powerful fraternities of light which preside over the destinies of America. Help us in the preservation of ancient rescue of the defenseless communities. Let us sustain the anguished hearts of countless mothers. All our forces are concentrated on the tremendous fight against the legions of ignorance. Give us all the help you can. We are the invisible part of earthly mankind, and many of us will soon return to the physical sphere to make restitution for past errors. Incarnate humanity is also our family. Let us all unite in one single vibration. We must check the advance of darkness with floods of light, and ward off the blows of evil with the shield of good. Rivers of blood and tears are threatening to flow over the fields of Europe. Let us proclaim the necessity of constructive work and expand our faith. May the Lord bless us. The broadcast was over, and Lysias turned off the receiver. I saw him discreetly away a tear which he could not hold back. With an expressive gesture, he exclaimed. What devoted workers our brothers of Residence are. However, he added sadly with a pause, everything will be useless. Soon earthly humanity will be facing tremendous suffering. But is there no possibility of averting this catastrophe? I asked, greatly moved. Unfortunately, replied Lysias in a grave tone of voice, the general state of affairs is exceedingly critical. In answer to the appeals of residents and other colonies working in the neighborhood of the lower zone, several meetings were held here. But the Ministry of Divine Union has already warned us that war is unavoidable because incarnate humanity, taken collectively, is like an insatiable person who has overeaten at a banquet. The organic crisis which follows is inevitable. Various nations have had an orgy of criminal pride, boastfulness and ferocious selfishness. Now they are experiencing the urgent need to expel these lethal poisons. Anxious to drop the painful subject, Lysias invite me to retire. Chapter 25, A Generous Initiative.